of this, because if somebody calls in, you take the call, because it won't be about.
Good morning, everyone. This is Joe Gray, and you're listening to Seven Generations Radio. And this morning, I have with me, my guests are Jan Hafer and Rita Neiman, and they're here to talk about sex trafficking and nowadays, current day slavery. It's a disturbing topic, to say the least. It's sad to know that this kind of thing goes on, but apparently it's a multi-billion dollar industry, for one thing, but it's also a very unfortunate, sad event to for a woman or a child to start off their life facing this situation. But I'd like to hear you all talk about it and tell me what you know about it, how you got involved in it, and I'll let you take it away. Rita, you want to start it off? And you want to say a little bit about your background and how you got involved with this issue.
Okay. My name is Rita Neiman. I'm relatively new to the Shepherdstown community, about 6 months. I'm a German teacher by trade, but about 8 years ago, through my church, I was confronted with the fact that I had spent most of my life being very blind and having a lot of assumptions, which all of us know what those do for us. But I viewed this movie called Not For Sale, and then I read the book. And I just wanted to shake it off because I really didn't want to deal with it. I wanted to say it was somewhere else, far away. It wasn't here. It wasn't my reality. But it wouldn't let go of me. I think sometimes that's what happens, is that God breaks our heart for things that break his heart. And it did that too for a pastor's wife. She had three small children, and she kept saying, what could I possibly do? How could I make a difference? And she tried, too, to shake it off, forget about it, but she couldn't. She kept reading. She kept viewing more videos. She kept studying it. She started looking at the laws, and she realized that it was much closer to home than anything that she ever wanted to deal with. So that was my beginning. Just she asked me to pray with her, and as we prayed and we walked through it, something began, and each person we talked to, their hearts broke too, because it's amazing. And I know that about Shepherdstown. Just in the 6 months I've been here, there are people here who are well educated, people who have traveled the world, people who could make a real difference. And that's why, even though I don't want to do this, I feel I must. I must get involved, and I must somehow help. And so my Pittsburgh experience I can relate to later, but for now I'll focus on the local. But let me let Jan introduce herself.
Thank you, Rita. Thank you, Joe, for having me on today.
My pleasure.
This topic is one that I didn't really think much about a few years ago, but when I was teaching at Gallaudet, I wanted to develop a new course, a multidisciplinary course, and I wanted to teach it on the global rights of children. And I discovered that sex trafficking of children worldwide is a huge problem. But before I get to that, I would just like to share with your listeners about an important document from the United Nations. It's called the Convention on the Rights of the Child. And this is what got me started in developing the class. And there are many, many rights for children worldwide. But the two that really got me were, the first one was children should have a right to a name. And I never realized that there are children in the world that don't have names. They have a number, or maybe nothing, to designate that they exist on earth. and who they are and what culture they're a part of. So that was one. But the second one that really got to me was that children have a right to be safe. So, of course, that right is taken away from the children that we are talking about, and even adults. Of course, they're involved in sex trafficking, too. They're victims as well. But my knowledge about this topic has to deal with children. But that's how I got involved. And so when I taught the course, I did a lot of research, and one of the assignments that I had for students was to take a topic that involved rights of children and do a report on it. And all the students in the class, these were freshmen and sophomore college students, they all wanted to do sex trafficking. You know, they'd seen it on TV, it's been on Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, things like that. But, and they actually knew quite a lot about it. So we learned a lot in this course, all of us, because these students did research and, we had videos. It was just fantastic. But, so that's how I got started in it. And then I met Rita, fast forward to a few months ago, and she and her husband, Charles, came to the visitor center, and that's where I met her. And subsequently, they moved here. And then one day, she was talking to me about this topic because it's, as you could tell from what she said, it's just something that she is called to do something about, whatever she can. So, you, Rita, I'd like you to sort of expand on your background with this and then your efforts to get involved with in the local community here. Though you are a newcomer, you have already made contacts with people in this area.
Yes. Well, definitely. Like I say, in Pittsburgh, it began small, and within months, the weekly or monthly meetings just grew and grew till the room was full of people of all different backgrounds. Had nothing to do with our church. It had was just a meeting place, and people from all walks of life came together, and they have started working through the university there. And I know we have a wonderful university here, and we've got great professors who could also incorporate this into their teaching. And I think this is starting to happen. I think it's probably always happened, but it happens one person here and there. And until we all come around the same table and share what we know, we don't really have that strength of community, of knowing how someone else can join in and help in the fight. Because I just, every day, I talk to somebody. I talked to a school nurse the other day, and she's interested. She wants to learn more. I talked to an artist, and she said, I don't know how I can do, but I said, of course you can do. You're an artist. You're creative. You can make a difference. So in Pittsburgh, what I saw happen is that through a fabulous professor there, people were able to start working with the FBI and with the police, and we started creating little bags that we could give to these task force when they went out to try to rescue someone. And it was just something little. Collect toothbrushes and do, you know, personal hygiene things, and get some meal cards and get some bus passes. And the list of what we could do, just at first we thought there was nothing we could do. It was way too big for us. And yet, broken down, it was just more and more and more. And we started viewing things like the Justice Conference. And just the more you learn, the more you realize that this problem is really, really big. And it is tragic to think that slavery is bigger today than it was 150 years ago when we abolished it. Our first people in Pittsburgh that we dealt with were not sex traffickers. They were work traffickers who had been brought to this country, and their legal documents had been stripped of them, and they were forced to work. They didn't speak English, you know, all those typical things of how you can the thumb down on someone and make them work incredibly hard. And it was wonderful one of my strange little tasks was every week I picked up food from a local food bank and I dropped it off at a library at the university. It was very hush-hush. I never actually got to meet these men, but I got to, in a small way, impact their lives. Short version of that, a year later, they had legal status in the United States. They had legal jobs. We were able to assist in bringing their families to the United States, and it had a happy ending, but not always does it have a happy ending. So, you know, identification, and then eventually in Pittsburgh, we started a safe house for women as they were rescued, because the big problem is once you rescue somebody, how do you help them? When you start to think about their needs, their educations have been disrupted, their emotional life is a total wreck, their family connections have usually been terribly strained or broken.
They probably have a fear of being deported as well, right?
Oh, they have a fear of the police, unfortunately. They've been taught that the police are their enemy instead of their friend. So there's just an awful lot of... I still, to this day, do not know how these courageous women... And I met two of them from the Columbus area. And they were really good for me because they broke down a lot of my assumptions. One was a strikingly beautiful black woman who, when she got up to spoke, she said, "I want you to understand that I came from a very upper middle class family. My brothers and sisters all have advanced degrees. My parents are married, you know, long term, so none of the stereotypes. But someone had moved into their community, a couple had moved in, and for 2 years they fostered relationships with the kids in that community. They chaperoned school dances, they had parties for the kids in the neighborhood at their house. They were just the coolest, nicest people you could ever meet. And then one weekend, they invited a group of girls to go to New York City to a show. And this girl begged her parents, and the parents were very hesitant, but finally they knew the couple, they knew the other kids going. Well, sadly, when they got to New York City, they went shopping, but it wasn't for the clothes that they thought they were going for. And these were all virgin girls who all were raped and abused the entire weekend, brought back and told that if they told anyone, that their brothers and sisters would be next. And so somehow she attempted to go back to school and attempted to face the world as it was. And one day she walked out of school and a car was waiting for her, and they stuffed her in the car and she disappeared for years. Mm. Now, they dressed her in furs and they took her all over the country. And she finally, bless her heart, thought she had a plan. I'm going to get pregnant. Then I won't be interesting to men anymore. She got pregnant and found out that men will pay an extra $100 a night to have sex with a woman who's 8 or 9 months pregnant. So it was, I mean, her story is heartbreaking. It was hard for me to listen to. And just the courage of seeing this gorgeous, stunning, gracious woman, you know, standing there. And she has started a ministry in Columbus. And because she has experienced this, women will trust her, where they won't trust the help of someone else. So she's making a huge difference. But the woman she brought with her was a white woman, very nice lady. Very, very nice. Came from a broken home. Daddy was gone, and mommy was trying to raise her, and so they had a big fight one day, and so she ran away from home and found a nice guy who treated her nice, who became her boyfriend, who eventually convinced her that he didn't have money, so he coerced her into having sex with all of his friends, and it went on and on and on downhill. And it took her years before she was able to escape.
Now, I understand that only a very small percentage of these women are identified, are found, and are helped. I think the number I saw was like 1%. That might be that the police have found and rescued. I think that's what they put that. But I mean, does that make sense to be that small of a number? And what can be done to get the word out? I mean, isn't it that we need to tell those kids to watch out? I mean, you got to tell the parents, but right. How do you change this?
Well, I think I'm a little suspicious of the 1% because I don't know how you can count these people because they're underground, they're off the record, they're living in the shadows. So, 1%, it doesn't surprise me that that's what people would say, but because I don't think that many, from what I've read, many don't get out of it. We don't have stories like Rita told. There are more stories about from the families who lose their children and never find them and can imagine the worst. But, you know, and Rita was talking about an American citizen that this happened to, and that's very common. But there are also, of course, children all over the world who are literally picked up off the streets of their village and kidnapped. And I know that it happens with American victims as well, but they often are given drugs. So then they're dependent on drugs, you know, heroin or cocaine or something. So that complicates the situation, the dependency to escape. If you read about the information we have on people who are long-term with somebody who kidnaps them, they're so brainwashed that they can't leave, or the kidnapper makes them physically dependent as well with drugs, or intimidates them. These children are beaten. I have a list here. Rita sent me this. It's called the Blue Campaign, and it's on human trafficking. This is a way to educate people about human trafficking and to prevent it. And there are characteristics that we all can look for. If we run into a child, for example, who seems fearful, anxious, depressed, submissive, tense, or nervous, just in your normal interaction with people on the street, or you see a child in a store and their behavior is not right, I mean, this is something that you have to pay attention to. Does the victim show signs of physical or sexual abuse, physical restraint, confinement? Now, some of those we wouldn't see, but it's the way a person acts, especially if there's the abuser there. Are they afraid of them? Do they defer to them? Are they quiet? Do they hang their head down? These are things that you should report. I don't want to be so alarmist, but really, in order for these children to be saved, citizens have to be aware of this problem and see how prevalent it is, and then act on it. And you can go on the internet, you can find all kinds of organizations with hotlines, and you know, the FBI. Is this the one from the FBI? I don't think I saw one from the FBI about what do you do if you suspect. You know, you call and report it. Yeah.
Absolutely. It is amazing. Like, one of the things that I never thought about is how truck stops are such a dangerous, dangerous place. And now I find myself in truck stops, and I truly fear that I have identified, you know, someone who's working the truck stops. And the thing is, what is it about me that I would have ever been so foolish as to believe that someone chooses to be a prostitute? Little girls dream of being princesses, not prostitutes. You know, and then oftentimes when you start going back through the history of what happened to these little girls, how many of them were sexually abused very early by people very close to them? What a cruel and horrible world that we live in. I mean, to realize that there's actually a whole thing where people fly to islands. There's sex vacations where people go to have sex with tiny children. It's just, you know, it is an industry where they say that it'll probably be bigger than drugs very soon, because drugs you can only sell once. A human being you can sell over and over and over again, and they do, night after night or day after day. It's just incredible, you know. But you asked about a hotline number, and there is a wonderful hotline number, and it's called, it's 1-888-373-7888. And it's a non-governmental, confidential helpline that anyone can call. And or you can even text for help, and it's 233-733. And I wished I'd had this little card when I was standing at that truck stop, because honestly, the worst thing, I wanted to grab this girl and stuff her in my car and drive off. You know, that was my reaction. But I knew that was wrong. That would have endangered both of us, because she was not there alone, you know. And so never try to be the vigilante in a situation. But
yeah,
if
you're
going to
wind up accused of kidnapping or something.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. But if I could have slipped her this little card, which is just, you know, and just said nothing, she would have been smart enough, I think, to have known what I was communicating. So the tragedy is that there is a need. If there wasn't a need, if we didn't have this huge brokenness in our society today.
Can I add something? I'd like to add something, Rita. Yes, you're right. I think it's horrible that there is a market for sexually abusing children and kidnapping them, keeping them against their will. But throughout the world, even in the States, but particularly in developing countries, children often, you know, they're poor. The family may have lost their crop due to a cyclone or something. They're destitute, and so the child has to go to work somewhere. And people will come in the village and say, "Well, you can come with us, and we'll give you a job in the city." Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that they enslave them, and they're prostitutes, that kind of thing. So they have to support their families. So that's one reason. And it's just cheap labor. If you can get a child, first of all, in our culture, even though, you know, we say we love children, children are not valued as they should be, because they have very few, you know, recognized rights. This is why this Convention on the Rights of the Child was written, and, you know, getting all the countries to sign on to it has been quite a process. But anyway, children are devalued in society, and they also, in a country like ours, they don't have the right to vote, so they don't have a voice. So it's up to adults to take care of them, watch out for them, and turn these people in who are breaking the law. And, you know, it's not only sex trafficking, it's just cheap labor. You know, when you buy a T-shirt, you go to an island and you buy a cheap T-shirt, it's probably made by one of these children who either are enslaved or just working every day, long hours, being exploited.
So that puts a question mark to the manufacturers of these goods, and maybe there's a possibility there to work that approach and boycott purchases that come from these kind of sources. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I was thinking about, of course, I wonder how many of these children, like here in the States, would wind up in the school system where they could be observed by the teachers, and the teachers play an important role. Do you think most of them are in a classroom environment or not?
Oh, that's probably a difficult question. Many of them are pulled out of their classroom environments, but we do have children sitting in our classes. I've been a teacher most of my life, and we do have children sitting in our classrooms. I had an 11-year-old who was pregnant, I remember. There's a lot that happens that we need to be observing, and that was really interesting. In the local HEAT, as they call it, the human exploitation and trafficking event that they had at Charlestown, one of the speakers really pointed out the fact that they estimate that there's 21 million victims, but very small amount of those are ever identified, but it's a $32 billion or more dollar industry that we're dealing with, and it's a very sophisticated. These people are smart. They have a criminal smartness about them that is really frightening, I would say that especially here, if we want to bring it a little bit closer to home, the Polaris Project has these ratings, and Jenny Childs, who's one of the founders of HEAT, pointed out in her talk that there are only 39 reported calls in West Virginia in 2014, and only 9 cases that were actually brought to court. Now, does that mean West Virginia is really, really a good state? Virginia reported 663. Maryland reported 572. Pennsylvania reported 527. Ohio reported 809. Now, we can believe that West Virginia is this perfect harbor and everybody's safe here, or we can understand that we're not aware and we're not reporting. And so there is no help for these children. When they rated West Virginia, it was the 49th state that actually had laws to criminalize human trafficking back in 2012.
Is this considered a rural problem, a municipal problem, or both?
I think people always want to think that this is a problem that happens only in big cities. We always want to believe it's far away from us. It happens across the ocean. It happens far away. We don't want to see it in our own backyard, but it's here. It's very much here, and it's not a safe haven. And I think, just like in Pittsburgh, we were able to get safe houses, I think it's time for West Virginia to get safe houses. And tragically, most of the safe houses throughout the United States are for adults. Yet most people that are human trafficked are somewhere between the ages of 11 and 14. And if those children are rescued and not killed, because many of them, their life expectancy is under 10 years from the time that they are trafficked. I mean, it is a horrible, horrible situation. But then we don't have a place for them in our society right now. We can't put them in with the older women, and so they end up in what, mental institutions or whatever. I mean, it's just sad. There's a huge break. We need to do more.
One added point on that. Children who are in foster care often run away because of the conditions, and then they get into it that way because they're on the streets. So the logical point would be to find these children, put them in foster care. But foster care, though there are many good foster homes, there are some that cause such damage to the child that they run away and they become, they're on the streets and they become victims. So it's complex. There's no easy answer, but I see Joe looking at his watch.
Well, we are winding down on time, and I'm sorry, we've really just scratched the surface here. There's so much more to this, seeking solutions. What are the causes? What are the things about our culture that breed this? What are the value systems that are behind all of this? And we could talk quite a bit more. So I think I'd like to have you guys come back again and we can go a little bit more on this subject. It's very good. And hopefully we can find some way to get our legislators here in West Virginia interested in this subject and see, you know, maybe we can make a little progress around home.
Absolutely. We will be having a local meeting here, hopefully at the end of the month. I'm just trying to finalize that.
Do you have a website or something, or a Facebook page or whatever that is dedicated to this?
They've started to create one, but boy, we could sure use some young person who's smart with that. They do have a heat website, and they do have an email. The email is easternpanhandleheat@gmail.com.
easternpanhandleheat
yes.
at gmail.com.
Yeah, uh-huh. And
would either of you be interested in giving out your name or phone number for a contact point if somebody
certainly.
Is interested in being involved in this?
Certainly. My name's Rita Neiman. And my phone number will be weird because it's an Ohio phone number, but it's 330-352-8917. And I would love to talk to people because I need lots of different persons and personalities to come around the table to make a difference to save our children.
Thank you very much. Hopefully good times are ahead, but I don't know. It's been running on this way for a while. Thank you so much for coming in. That's Seven Generations Radio. And,